As globalism transitions from global to local, we become vocal local, blocking the globalist agenda right where we are, in our towns, cities, counties, and states. And now, here is that nemesis of globalism, your host, William Roberts.
And the sun is arising over Missouri, folks. It's time for a show me showdown. We got breakfast on the table, coffee brewing on the stove all across America. And there's a revolution in the air. Be a part of it. Welcome to our Wednesday, May the 13th, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local, coming to you Monday through Friday here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network, oraclebroadcasting.com. We're on the web. I've got a little website out there, vocallocal.org. You might want to go up and visit there. Look at the way that I explain what Become Vocal Local is there in just a brief and simple way, if you will. Also, check out Plan B if you haven't read it before. It's not intended to be a great treatise of any kind by any means, but it's just kind of a colloquy or a collection of writing, a compendium of various things that I've put together so that I could understand better this idea of becoming vocal local. It also helped me to crystallize my thinking and conviction that we really truly do need to abolish the established two-party political system. Anyway, my name is William Roberts. I've got good news of sorts. Hard facts, certainly. Lots of ideas along those fact lines, the factoids today. And maybe we'll even discuss some workable solutions if we can get into that. If you can't remember the last time you experienced the pursuit of happiness, then you've definitely found the right place at the right time to become vocal local. This is the home of philosophical radicalism, where freedom is popular and remains the best hope for America. Interactive Talk Radio is the name of the game, and to be a part of today's broadcast, you can sign in, pick a name, and become vocal local in the OracleBroadcasting.com chat room, or pick up the telephone and call throughout the broadcast. For those without unlimited long distance or in the Austin, Texas area, you may call 512-904-8014 to join me live on air. And from around America and around the world, you can call toll-free at 866-841-1065, and your calls are welcome. Those telephone numbers are posted on the oraclebroadcasting.com homepage. If you need them during the broadcast, refer there. You may also send your ideas for guest show topics and news to me via email, although my email box seems to be temporarily down at the moment. We'll come back to that, hopefully, and have it up and running again today. And for those without internet access listening via any of our affiliate stations, you can take advantage of the snail mail and send letters to me at William Roberts Post Office Box 96 out of Exeter, Missouri, 65647. Of course, if we don't continue to use our postal service, then the reason for the season of keeping all of our postal routes and roads sort of slides to the sideways, and maybe we'll see more and more of these small town post offices going by the boards. We shouldn't do that. Find a time from time to time, pick up a pencil, write a a little letter to somebody, put it in an envelope, throw a stamp on it, chuck it in the mailbox, and give your postal delivery person something to do today. And again, a big shout out to Liberty Radio in Owensville, Micro 1650 AM in Buffalo, 94.3 Elgin in Texas, and all the other micro broadcasters out there across America that are picking up and rebroadcasting the Become a Vocal Local signal. In our websites are vocallocal.org, ozarksvoter.info. The listener call-in number is 866-841-1065, and the Oracle chat room is open. Lots to talk about today. Gold is continuing its traverse in a very narrow spread near the London price fix. We'll talk about that briefly. Very little economic news is going to be talked about today. We'll talk about time, history, anthropology, anarchism, world civilizations. Today we'll look at the Hittites and the Aegeans. Of course, we'll take your calls and much, much more. Let's start those market reports for Wednesday, May the 13th, 2009. Active trading in New York City as of 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time. That would be 1 hour ago, so these numbers have already changed. Gold was trading off $3.70 at $919.20. That's just $6 below the London spot price, the gold fix, if you will. $919.20 for gold. Silver off 24 cents, trading at $13.98. We'll pick it up on the other side and continue this broadcast. Stay with us.
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, information is the currency of democracy. Trine Day brings to you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monk is a book of profound importance. It helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Of the 3 million-plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from HempUSA.org.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
And welcome back to our Wednesday, May the 13th, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local. My name is William Roberts. We've got a lot to go through today. Before I go back to the market report and close that out for this morning, I just want to remind the audience or let you know, program note, tomorrow, with if all things go as planned, I'll be joined for the full 2 hours by Jim Berryman, the owner-operator of Micro 1650 AM out of Buffalo. We're going to be talking about micro-broadcasting in the AM band. Jim really has a lot of understanding and experience in the micro business and in the AM broadcasting hobby area, if you will. He's got a lot of the legal end of things hammered down real tight, but he's also got the technical aspects hammered down really well, too. So if you're thinking about it, getting involved in running a micro broadcaster in your area, you'll definitely want to be here for the full 2 hours tomorrow morning. Also, if you know anybody out there that is a micro broadcaster that wants to be part of the discussion, you might shoot them an email today so that they know that we're doing a micro and low-power talk tomorrow morning. Get them on board. Anybody that you know that might be interested in it, maybe that's on the fence or still has questions, tomorrow will be the time to come to our little homeschool classroom as we get down and dirty, if you will, with micro-broadcasting. So let's go back and close out this market report for today, Wednesday, May the 13th, 2009. This was active trading numbers in New York City as of 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. We found gold down $3.70, trading at $919.20. Silver was off 24 cents at $13.98. Platinum was down $12. All the metals down this morning so far. Platinum was down $12, trading at $1,119 an ounce. Palladium was off $5 at $228. Going into the stock market, the Dow Jones closed yesterday up 50.34 points, trading at 8,469.11 or 11. The NASDAQ was off 1532 yesterday, trading at 1715.92. The S&P closed down 89 points, 0.89 points at 908.35. That USDX was in morning trading so far, trading up 30 basis points at 82.42. But 82.42 is still fairly low for that USDX, so watch as that continues to go down. I think it's going to. Crude oil off 14 cents, trading at $58.71 a barrel. Crude is getting higher and higher, moving toward the $60 mark, stronger, staying above 55. Keep an eye on that as we come closer to the summer traveling season and, really more importantly, the, over-the-road haulers and all of the farmers, the people that use gasoline, and diesel fuel. They're going to be taking it in the shorts once again as these prices go up. Watch for the increases at the pump. The lows and the highs in the spot market, we're seeing a pretty narrow band in here. As I start out the broadcast this morning, gold continuing to traverse in a very narrow spread. This band of deviation, if you will, throughout the day so far, $13, $916.50 to $929.60. This is a pretty small increment. You have to change the scale. Up on Kitco.com, where I look at the charts every morning, they have to change the scale and express it in the XY, the dollars, in $2 increments just to really see the differences here. Anyway, year to year, the 919.90, as it stood at 9 o'clock, is up $52.90 year on year for a 6.11% gain or return on your investment. The London Gold Fix today was set at 925.75, as we've been seeing over the last few days. The gold is trading right on, right very near the gold fix. So they basically fix the price in the morning, and it doesn't deviate much from that. They'll set it again in the afternoon, so keep an eye on that. The spot market is going to close. The gold spot market will close in about 7 hours. We'll see where it closes today. In the foreign exchange rate, the little basket of currencies, as we like to say, little Timmy out there dancing through the tulips. The Canadian dollar trading at 86 cents U.S., the Mexican peso at 8 cents. The Canadian dollar was the only one of these that we carry or discuss each day, had any kind of an upward movement. But these upward movements are really tiny. If you want to try and figure it out for yourself, the multiplier here is 1.1614. And so you do the math on that, it comes out to 86 cents U.S. The Mexican peso off a little tiny bit today, but still at 8 cents, just barely hanging on in there. You can fill up your pockets, as I like to say, with Mexican pesos for 8 cents apiece. The euro, much deeper dig there. It's up, it's off a little bit again today, trading at $1.36 against the U.S. dollar. The British pound, $1.51. And the Swiss franc trading at 90 cents. All of them are down today in our little basket of currencies, except the U.S. dollar and the Canadian dollar. So there you have the market report for today. We're not going to do any more news today. I just didn't see anything really worth repeating, but I'm sure others will find something valuable to report during the day, so you'll catch it from them. But we're going to talk a little bit yesterday, for those of you who are listening. We closed the broadcast out with just a general little tiny little drop, if you will, in regards to time and time being an illusion. I'll just elaborate a little bit more on that. Some years back, I had a very strong urge to get to know more about time and calendrical thinking and chronology and things like that. I was doing certain timelines which really helped to bring together the 3,000, 4,000 years of history that I've studied. And it came to me that time was quite a bit of an illusion. And if, you know, we go through our lives, we don't, you know, we punch the time clock, we're in at 8 o'clock, we're out at 5 o'clock, or whatever your time clock you punch is. But time is quite a bit of an illusion. And it came to me that there were three criteria that were necessary for time to step out of this illusory nature of itself and actually start to have some meaning or some value. And there are three that I mentioned yesterday in the close of the broadcast. the first thing that really needs to happen, if you want to discuss time with any kind of clarity, you need to have a point of beginning and a point of ending. Otherwise, it's really not time. Depending on which direction you're looking, it's just an arrow that points away on a number line. It's more eternal than anything else. It's an eternity backwards or an eternity forwards, depending on your reference points. So there has to be a point of beginning and a point of ending. Then there also needs to be a unit of measure. That unit of measure is rather unusual in that it can be any kind of a unit of measure whatsoever. We have on this planet historically looked at the revolutions of the Earth about its axis as the Earth itself revolves in an elliptical manner around the Sun. We'll come back to that in a moment. The third criteria that's necessary is an observer. Without an observer, time is not just an illusion, but it's just something that's just, time doesn't really even exist. I mean, things happen, but, it's not charted in time. Interesting thing, however, about the observer is that the observer has the power or the ability, if you will, to select his unit of measure, and it doesn't make a lot of difference what unit of measure the observer wants to choose. As long as they keep using the same unit of measure, then they can talk about things like time. And that unit of measure, as it can change and has changed in our own history, then becomes a focal point, something we need to pay attention to. Because if we lose track of what the unit of measure was, then we lose track of time. We'll be back on the other side of this break, pick it up right where we're leaving off now. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail. It is a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products, including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic foods,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home and garden, and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website again is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
How would you like to finally be debt-free without paying another cent to creditors and not have to file bankruptcy? DebtCrisisSolutions.com can help free you from the debt trap. This is not a debt settlement program which has tax consequences or debt consolidation. With our program, there are no more payments to creditors or collectors. We will help restore your credit history, protect your property, prevent paycheck garnishments, and preserve your bank account. We also provide mortgage modification services which can lower your mortgage payments without refinancing. If you're facing foreclosure or are in the foreclosure process, we can help. Finally, proven debt solutions that work for the people. Become debt-free in 90 days. Doing nothing doesn't make the debt go away. Call Debt Crisis Solutions today and speak to an advisor. Absolutely free. Call 718-615-0123. That's 718-615-0123. Or visit them online at DebtCrisisSolutions.com. That's DebtCrisisSolutions.com today.
Are you one of the people who think, I have plenty of time, nothing's ever going to happen bad to me? Do you believe that when your cupboards are bare, our corporate-controlled government will jump right in to feed you and yours? Do you have at least a year's supply of food for your family? This is Kurt, the armchair survivalist, heard on this network. Survival Enterprises sells real food, canned for long-term storage. Beef, chicken, turkey, bacon, butter, cheese, eggs, freeze-dried fruits and vegetables, Mountain House freeze-dried meals, MREs, a full nutritional line, the British Birkfeld water filter, and more. If you want to prepare now, go to beforeitstoolate.us. That's beforeitstoolate.us. Or call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. Or you can put your head in the sand and be just another sheeple in the corporate-controlled flock. But remember, those who don't learn from history are bound to repeat it.
Ah!
Okay, and we're back once again. So let's go back into this briefly. I don't want to spend all of the broadcast on this, but I want to spend a little bit of time on it because it's important. It's important for a lot of people, I think. It was certainly important for me. But when we think about time as an illusion, it really helps to understand and put in perspective these three criteria. And then again, the point of beginning, the point of end, a unit of measure which can be changed, and the observer which also can be changed. We hand off from one generation, if you will, or from one observer to the next, these various and sundry units, and we have changed these units a lot. We went through our study of the Egyptians and the Mesopotamians, and in all of this, we're going to continue through and find out more about the Aegeans, the Greeks, the Romans, etc., and we're going to find that calendars and calendrical things, the Druids, everybody has calendars, Stonehenge, which comes up on my computer when I turn it on every morning. There are many different ways of keeping track of time, but so we've got these three points. You know, and if you look at from the Bible, it says, in the beginning, God, you know. Well, it doesn't really say in the beginning God created. That it really is Bereshith, which in itself is a huge study, and you might go out and read Maimonides, The Guide to Perplexed, and get a better understanding of that. But nevertheless, typically and traditionally, you know, the Bible starts that way. Well, in the beginning of what? Well, in the beginning of time, according to the Hebrew chronology. In the beginning, God. And so when we ask questions like, well, you know, who created God or how long, it all just becomes an absurdity because it all depends upon these observers. And before there was anyone observing the illusion of time and keeping track and measuring on the planet Earth, time was being kept by the great timekeeper or whomever. So that's important. But we can also take another tie-in, if you will. I don't know how many of you who heard Mike Ananda Singh's broadcast over the weekend. He had a very interesting theorist, a physicist on, and he was talking about something else that I've come across in my own studies years ago and have formulated some ideas. But let me just say that if time is an illusion, the second one is, that's important, is that motion is impossible. Well, that's kind of bold. But nevertheless, think of this through one time. If you have a notepad in front of you, and I hope you do have a piece of paper and a pencil these days. Not everybody does, but it's difficult to do this without a piece of paper and a pencil. But if you just make draw a line across your notepad at the top and divide the line into seven somewhat equal pieces, just put some tick marks on it, you'd have three on the left and three on the right of the one in the center, and that one you could call zero, and we've all seen this timeline before. This is how we're taught mathematics. And so then we'd have to ask about faith, and faith comes into this mathematics thing, depends on whether or not you have any faith. Faith is a belief system like any of the belief systems that we've covered in the last couple of weeks here as we go through this study of anarchy and the civilizations of the world. But if you have faith, then I can ask if you believe in mathematics or if you believe in addition. Is 2 plus 2, 4? And 4 and 4, 8. And then 16 and 32 and 64 and 128 and 256 and 512 and 1028 and so on, indefinitely. If you believe in the additive principle, then you can accept that it just goes on and on. And if it was like blocks of stone, you could continue to add more blocks on top. As long as you built a broad foundation, you could just keep adding blocks on top indefinitely. And, of course, the Tower of Babel is along that line of thinking. So are the Egyptian pyramids. So if we can accept this faith by on faith that you could continue to add indefinitely, then it would go out eternally from a point where there was zero, if you say, on the number line. Now, then you have to ask yourself, do you have any faith in the subtractive principle? Can you continue to take away? So you've built this huge pile, and you can just take away one, and you can take it away another. Now you've got two, and then you can take away 4 and 8 and 16 and 32 and 64 and 128 and go the other way. So if you believe in addition, if you have faith in that, and you can accept the corollary subtraction, then we can also look into things like multiplication and division that works the same way. You've got one, and then you've got a quarter, or you got one, and then you have halves, and then you have quarters, and eighths, and sixteenths, and 32nds, and 64ths, and 128ths, and so on. And things just get smaller and smaller and smaller. Well, when we look at something like that, then we've got to understand that travel is often expressed as you know, moving from point A to point B. So on your number line, you could pick anywhere, minus 2 to a plus 2, and you could say that we want to move from a minus 2 to a plus 2. How far do we have to travel to get there? And as the Pythagoreans taught, you know, the shortest distance between two points was a straight line or a vector, if you will. And so we do that. So we move from point 2 to point 1. But, of course, it gets to be unusual if you start to really think about it. Let's say you do have 1 and you divide it in half. Now you've got 2 halves and then 4, and that's quarters and eighths and sixteenths and 30 seconds. Well, the problem is that you have this stumbling stone here called a zero. The zero. If we believe and have faith in multiplication and division and addition and subtraction, there's no zero. You continually move into smaller and smaller particles, and then you get down into the faith area of the atomists, and then you go into molecular physics, and then you go down further and further and further and further. Once a long time ago, well, I might have been under the influence of a hallucinogenic, I had this idea that the man was basically a transmitter, receiver, and that we operate or we exist in a certain frequency band, and that we understand what we understand because of the five senses and the frequency band that we operate on. But that at any time, if we knew how to do it, we might be able to move from one frequency to another simply by adjusting our dial. We adjust our receiver or we adjust our transmitter. Well, this whole idea about motion becomes absurd when you realize that you can never occupy point A because point A theoretically doesn't exist. You can never arrive at point B because likewise, theoretically, point B does not exist. So you cannot go from point A to point B. The best you could hope for is to hover someplace in the vicinity of A and hover someplace in vicinity of B, but having never left A and having never arrived at B, you've gone no place. You're just in transition. And so as I have at various times talked about on this broadcast, we very carefully research our history, the things that have been written down that we could find, and we visualize, if you will, or mentally project the future. And there's a whole gob and a bunch we could talk about there, about using the power of your transmitter receiver properly. But we find ourselves having looked into the backwards, looking backwards, and then looking forwards. We find ourselves always in what we consider to be the present. And I use the analogy of going running out on the end of a diving board, leaping up, putting all the weight on the end of the board, and then you spring up. The springboard springs you up, throws you up into the air. And our entire existence seems to be that point where your toes have just come off that board, projected forward into the future in this illusion of time by your momentum, the momentum of the past. So we get into these ideas of eternity versus infinity. Eternity, if you take 1, minus 2, minus 3, and just keep going off to the left, if that's how you've organized your timeline, or you take your 1, your 2, and your 3, and you just keep on going off to the right in that way, if you use a vector and just point into the minus zone and go on, that's eternity. It just goes on and gets smaller and smaller eternally. And if you go into the plus range, it just goes on and on eternally. But that zero is a curious thing because, to me, it represents infinity. It's the entire spectrum. It's represented by the Mobius strip. Motion is an illusion. Time is an illusion. Time is ready to go into another break, and we'll be right.
As America limps on its lost legs, a pillar of truth has risen. You're listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Aerial spray, chemtrails, the modified atmosphere, heavy metals and pesticides, carcinogens and chemical fibers all falling from the sky. You have a choice to keep your body clean. Detoxify with microplant powder from hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. It's odorless and tasteless and used in any liquid or food. Protect your family now with microplant powder. Cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, and toxins. Order it now for daily intake and stock it now for long-term storage. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
They say that you could travel the world without leaving your home through the pages of a book. Adventures Unlimited brings you all the adventures that you could imagine when you travel through the pages of their books. Adventures Unlimited carries an eclectic diversity of subjects such as alternative health and science, free energy, ancient history, Native American studies, and much, much more. Get away from the daily grind, unwind, and feed your mind to free your mind. Explore any topic you wish at AdventuresUnlimitedPress.com. They're not only an online bookstore, but have stores located around the world and have been in business for over two decades. Adventures Unlimited Press, your own world of information is only a page away.
Documentary film, The Secret Rite, Volume 1. I'm Josh Reeves, and for the almost 2 years, I have researched the secret of right-wing group, known as the Council for National Policy. This film explores for the first time the hidden hand that controls the religious and military aims of the American right wing, with such topics as Iran-Contra, the John Birch Society, eugenics, the Vatican controllers, Christian Zionists, the Bohemian Grove, the Patriot Movement, and more. More powerful than the Council on Foreign Relations, more secretive than the Bilderberg Group, The Secret Rite Volume 1 goes where no other film has dared to go. Get your copy today at SecretRightMovie.com. That's www.SecretRightMovie.com. And find out what you haven't been told about the New World Order.
We're going into the depression today. We've taken all our topics before. We can do it again.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
And so we've returned and getting into this philosophical radicalism just a little bit further if we can. Just talking about time and motion and space and distance and travel and all of these various and sundry things. It's important for those that are amateur historians such as myself or amateur philosophers and so on. It has been the stuff of considerable consideration for thousands of years. And as we've gone through from the Egyptians all the way up, and we're just about to touch on the Hittites, the Aegeans, and the lesser cultures before we dive across the Mediterranean and get involved with the Greeks and go into Rome, we need to understand some of these things because they are issues that have a great impact and import, if you will, on religions, on understanding, on philosophies, etc., and ultimately into the civilizations, the world civilizations that we're studying, and also the political structure, the leaders, the minds of the master blasters, the archons and the Dracos and all the rest of them. So this out of the book I just referred to briefly the other day, Diggers for Facts by Kinnaman. Again, he is a archaeologist and renowned archaeologist of his day, J.O. Kinnaman, A.B.A.M., Ph.D., D.D., M.V.I., my goodness. He's a member of the Palestine Exploration Fund of Great Britain, the Victoria Institute of Great Britain, vice president of the Society for the Study of the Apocrypha of Great Britain, life member of the Society of International Archaeologists, formerly the editor-in-chief of the American Antiquarian and Oriental Journal and the archaeological editor of the Bible Digest. In this book, Diggers for Facts, The Bible in the Light of Archaeology, was published by the Destiny Publishers, originally printed in April of 1940, so we see that the first printing of this book was but 1 year removed from the first printing of our text on world civilizations, and in the fifth printing it was 1947, so it carried through five printings. The one that I'm looking at is copyrighted 1940. And this is a hardbound, another one of these flea market finds. Chapter 2, he devotes to chronology. Let's hear what this man has to say. And again, he was an Egyptologist. He traveled and worked with Petrie and some of the other greats in the field of archaeology. And we're going to find out a little bit about archaeology as we study this particular section, the Hittites. But the greatest stumbling block, writes Kinnaman, that the student of history in the Bible encounters is that of chronology. The questions always confront the student. One, when did the event take place? Or two, when was the artifact made? The American people, continues, are the most persistent along the line of inquiry regarding time or date. Other peoples are not so inquisitive. Men of ancient times were something like the natives of Central Africa, scarcely any comprehension of the lapse of time, and therefore no interest in the subject. Again, they may have been rather philosophical regarding time. Let me ask the reader for his definition of time. I have asked this question of literally hundreds of college students, and unless the student had an elementary course in philosophy, I failed to receive an intelligible answer. Let us examine the subject for a moment for the purpose of investigating whether there is any conflict between the scientific concept of time and the biblical one. Again, he's writing from a biblical and an archaeological perspective, so just give him that. The average English dictionary, he writes, defines time as the measure of duration. This is not a definition of time in the absolute, but a partial definition of a machine to calculate duration. If you stop for a moment, you'll readily see the limitations of language. We do not always say what we mean, nor mean what we say. Meaning and definition go deeper than language, whatever form it may take, excepting symbolism. Now, it is vitally important that our listeners and my listeners understand what logical positivism is. I've spoken on it in the past, and I'll cover it again in detail. But he's intimating here some understanding of logical positivism, where things that we say as logical positivists may not be what we mean, it may not be what we thought, it may not be what we thought at the time, but what was written turned out to be little more than a symbol in a language game. A symbol in a language game. So he's given us all of the elements right here in this three sentences, all of the elements necessary for the understanding of logical positivism, but he doesn't refer to it. Just as an aside, things we know about reading. Continuing, we talk about time in a childish manner, just as if it mattered to the great eternal or the creator of the universe or the supreme being or however you want to style it. Let me illustrate. We speak of the duration of time usually in terms of years. By a year, we mean the duration which it takes the Earth to make one circuit of its orbit. This duration consists of about 365 1/4 days, or that many revolutions of the Earth upon its axis. In this manner, we're accustomed to calculate duration here upon Earth. But did you ever stop to consider that our measuring stick is not the measuring stick of the universe as we know it today? Suppose that you are 40 years old as we measure duration on this Earth. How old are you if you were on Mars, whose orbit comes within 33,000 miles of the Earth's orbit at its closest point? Mars is outside of our orbit. Then let us go to Saturn. How old would you be there? The most of us would not yet be born. If we were to go to the outermost planet of our system, it would be many, many times the length of our measuring stick before we'd even be thought of by God, he writes. Does time exist, or is it a mere chimera of the human mind? If it does exist, can it be eliminated? If time can be nullified, can space also be eliminated? Does space really exist, or is that another fantasy of the thing we call the mind? Let us examine the subject briefly for a moment. The Earth rotates approximately 1,080 miles per hour as the measurement of distance and time. That is only 18 miles per minute. A comparatively slow speed is compared with others in nature. We have aeroplanes that make something over 700 miles per hour now, and again this is 1940, and have not yet reached the limit by any means. Scientists say that we may shortly acquire the speed of 1,080 miles per hour, or the apparent speed of the sun. Let us suppose that we have an aeroplane that has attained that speed. We board the ship and take off at exactly 12 o'clock at noon at New York City. We fly westward at 1,080 miles per hour until we land in San Francisco and discover that it is still 12 o'clock noon in the city on the Pacific. Have we eliminated time or space or both? Thus, when we speak of time as an entity of our experience, we are literally going in circles. There are those who still maintain that there is a conflict between the Bible and science. Of course, you've got to understand the perspective here. How can there be, he writes, the Bible is the revealed word of God, so is science. God is the author of both, intimating the laws of nature and of nature's God there, and also the natural sciences. Both, continuing from the author here, both reveal the capital W will, and the capital L laws of capital G God alike. One in the realms of religion, the other in the cosmic manifestations, both visible and invisible as related to the sensory constitution of the genus Homo or man. How can God enter into a conflict with himself? There can, therefore, be no conflict between science and the Bible. Well, you see, this is part of the problem, folks, is that we start separating things that we can prove versus things that we speculate about. Speculations and empirical knowledge are two different things. And so I'm going to leave this off at this point, but I just wanted to let you know that if you want to get involved in this kind of a thinking, there is material out there. And as Mikananda Singh, if I'm pronouncing his name right, his guest intimated, as a young man, his guest was fascinated and overwhelmed by this idea of the dot on the number line. And I'm sure he's not the only one, because I had the same experience in my life. We are given certain yardsticks and certain measurements and certain things to use that we then go ahead and form our reality. Words have meanings. Their meanings are important. And how they're used have importance as well. But as we've seen in our little brief, very brief little study here of time, in my opinion as an illusion, and motion as another one of these illusions, time and space being highly relative, not absolute, then we can start to understand that when we take these things as absolutes, we might walk into the land of error. Let's go back into our study here and pick up the last of these Orientals, the Hittites, the Aegeans, and lesser cultures. And this, again, is out of our book. The author was Edward McNall Burns. And I guess we'll have to take this break, and when we come back, we'll continue. Stay right there. We'll be back.
PureBulk.com has more than 120 nutritional products, super antioxidants, amino acids, and herbal extracts, including advanced life extension nutrition. Find great products like atomic iodine, oil of oregano, spirulina algae, niacin, performance amino acids, herbal extracts, skin care, and heart health nutrition. PureBulk.com products have no fillers, no additives, no hype, and no fancy retail packaging. Just the highest quality bulk nutrition at wholesale pricing. You can also save 50 to 90% off retail nutritional prices when buying bulk wholesale powders and capsules. Shop securely online at purebulk.com or call 406-251-3270. That number again, 406-251-3270. Use the coupon code iodine and receive a 1 gram atomic iodine sample with any order. That's a 150-day RDA supply of atomic iodine absolutely free. Find out more online at purebulk.com.
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books.
Thomas Jefferson said, "Information is the currency of democracy. Try and Day brings to you what some don't want you to read today." Dr. Mary's Monk is a book of profound importance. It helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book, Exposing the Secret Plans of the World's Elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Of the 3 million-plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from HempUSA.org.
And we're back. I think the sound is down now. Okay, great. We're back. All right. So going in, before we go back and dive right straight into this text again, we did find that having done a little bit of web browsing, we come up with a little bit of knowledge about who this Mr. Burns is, the author of this book, Edward McNall Burns, and from a research paper published by Daniel Siegel, S-E-G-A-L, titled Western Civ and the Staging of History in American Higher Education. Off the internet, you can do a screw Google Dogpile or Webfer, however you browse and find it, probably. You'll have to go multiple pages in, however, and the pages that are displayed are way down on the list to find it. Nevertheless, we find that Mr. Burns here, his text first appeared in 1941, and in the 12th edition remains in print today as of the time this author was writing. He was a member of the Rutgers University faculty from 1928 until his retirement in 1962. So let's go in and take a very brief look at Rutgers University from the Encyclopedia of the, Americana, and this a 1951 edition. Rutgers University, New Brunswick, New Jersey, founded as Queens College on November the 10th, 1766, under a charter granted by King George III, was the eighth college to be established in the American colonies. In the charter, which was slightly altered in 1770, the purpose of the college was set forth as the, quote, education of youth in the learned languages, liberal and useful arts and sciences, close quote. The college was opened at New Brunswick in 1771, but when the British occupied the city during the American Revolution or the War for Independence, classes were held temporarily at Millstone and at North Branch. The present site of the college was erected, was acquired in 1808, and here the following year was erected Queen's Building, a fine example of Georgian colonial architecture designed by John McComb, so on and so forth. In 1825, the name was changed to Rutgers College in honor of Colonel Henry Rutgers, and of course, Henry Rutgers was an American philanthropist, born in New York in 1745, died there in 1830, and he gave a gift of $5,000 to Queens College of New Jersey, which thereupon took the name of Rutgers. So there's how it got its name, because of $5,000 philanthropic sponsorship. In 1825, the name was changed to Rutgers, obviously right there when he got the money. And in 1864, In 1864, the Rutgers Scientific School was designated by the state legislature as the New Jersey College for the Benefit of Agriculture and the Mechanic Arts to be maintained by the Board of Trustees under contract with the state. This is important. The pioneering work in agricultural science that soon followed at the college farm resulted in the founding in 1880 of the New Jersey Agricultural Experiment Station, the third American experiment station to be established by the state legislation. With the gradual expansion of state services in technical education and research, the legislature in 1917, we're rapidly jumping up here now, designated the college as a state university of New Jersey, New Brunswick Theological Seminary of the Reformed Church of America. Originally was affiliated with the college, but in 1856, it became a separate institution, so they see that it had a separation from theology to science, just as our author here, Kinnaman, was styling it, this problem between the rectification of science and the Bible. Okay, this split occurred. And then continuing, the name Rutgers University was adopted in 1924. The university now comprises the following divisions: the College of Arts and Sciences in 1766, the College of Engineering 1864, College of Agriculture 1864, the Department of Ceramics in 1902, the New Jersey College for Women 1918, School of Education 1923, University Extension Division 1925. Then the New Jersey College of Pharmacy, blah, 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 continues down, drops down, drops down. But what's important in all here is this understanding of the University Extension Division in 1925. I have in the past, and we'll again talk about the University Extension Program in land-grant colleges all across America. But if we'll drop down here a little bit, locating these textbooks back to our opening document by Mr. Siegel, talking about a minor bio that he's put together on Burns. There's very little autobiographical material available, nothing I can find on the web yet. Locating these textbooks and thus the emergence of Western Civ survey courses in the context of interwar anxieties about civilization's fate illuminates elements of these texts and courses that have gone undetected, or at least unmentioned in recent circular debates. To begin with, in seeking to write or correct civilization, the authors of these texts urged a steadfast allegiance to a lineage of rationality, or that's reason, science, and civilization, civil is a key phrase in there, that in their view transcended contemporary strife, particularisms, that's important, and inhumanity, or a anti-humanist point of view. As a rule, these texts were avowedly internationalist, key phrase, cosmopolitan, key phrase, and secular. Burns himself, for instance, had once joined an organization that advocated a single world government as the most rational approach to resolving human conflicts. In introducing the first edition of his text, he declared that, quote, all progress has resulted from the growth of intelligence and tolerance, and that therein lies the chief hope for a better world in the future. Moreover, while the authors of these works were oblivious to the ways their cosmopolitanism, internationalism, and secularism were exclusionary and local, they offered a vision of North America's past, and it just continues. So, again, we listen to everybody, we read anything, but we've got to be very careful to verify information before we just embrace it. So, like our writer here, Kinnaman, in The Diggers for Facts, The Archaeology in Light of the Bible, we also have perhaps a more humanist, if you will, reference international and cosmopolitan point of view being presented here in these pages. And I detected that right off the bat early on and have been following that. That's why I keep digging into this book. But at the same time, it is very well written and extremely well referenced. I mean, the bibliographical material at the end of each of these sections is profound. You could spend your entire life on this book and never read all of the material that's presented in it through all of the various bibliographies and related sources. So there's much here for us. And that is partly, I think, the reason why it has endured through not just six editions, but 12 at the time that this author wrote, and it may still be in use. And as I showed yesterday, it is in use, and it's been the primary, one of the primary texts for the study of world civilizations. A very prominent book with an author we know little about. Food for thought. Put it in your mind. Keep it in your mind. Now, we're going to start in. We're almost out of time in the first hour. We're going to continue this discussion in the second hour. I certainly hope you'll stay with us for that. But if you do have to go away, be sure and remember that we have archives of all of these broadcasts. My broadcasts are not the same as many others out there. This is kind of an educational period of time. We start our day off with a little bit of philosophical radicalism and higher learning, if you will, largely because there's been a real problem, Dorothy, for many, many, many years in the educational system. And so as we move into this 21st century, as we are cowed and pushed into this box canyon of globalism, the one world superstate, we're going to need to be armed with everything that we can put our minds on and have more truth than what we've been given. And so we try and read this material with as much discernment as possible. Like you say, we have to run our antennas all the way up to the top, turn our high beams on, and go through these various and sundry texts. But in my library, I have no other book that as quickly and as concisely and as expertly and from an academic standpoint appropriately presents the flow of human civilization, world civilizations, as this book has. And I'm nearly finished with it now. I've just been consuming this thing. So anyway, we're going to talk about the Hittites, very important, the Aegeans and the lesser cultures in there, as we close out what you might consider the Oriental aspect, the Oriental civilizations, the Near East, the Middle East. We haven't been to the Far East, but there are Far Eastern influences there. But it's primarily the what they call the basket of civilization, the cradle of civilization. That we've focused on up to this point. We looked at the Hebrews, we've looked at the Mesopotamia, we've looked at the Egyptians, and we find this amalgam called religion that is about ready to head west into the Western man. We'll pick it up on the other side. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail. It is a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products, including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic foods,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home and garden, and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website again is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
As globalism transitions from global to local, we become vocal local, blocking the globalist agenda right where we are, in our towns, cities, counties, and states. And now, here is that nemesis of globalism, your host, William Roberts.
And welcome back to our Wednesday, May the 13th, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local. We come to you Monday through Fridays. We begin our second hour here on Oracle Broadcasting Network. That's oraclebroadcasting.com. The call-in numbers are posted on the front page of the website. They're also 512-904-8014 locally in the Austin, Texas area, or to take it mobile with you. And you can also call in around America and around the world at 866-841-1065. Let's go back into this, the Hittites, the Aegeans, and the lesser cultures. I really want to move through this, like a close out this Oriental despotism as a primary segment in our understanding of anarchy, insofar as that the word anarch comes out of the Bible and can be found in the New Testament, the Gospels, if you will. And from that, we can understand perhaps a little bit about the correct understanding or the correct meaning of the term. I'd like to go into, tomorrow we're going to have a special guest, but on Friday perhaps we'll pick up the more modern applications of what anarchy and anarchism is. Let's go into the Hittites, the Aegeans, and the lesser cultures. We begin with the Hittites. Here's a quote starting out this particular chapter 7 out of our book. And by the way, we're covering chapter 7. We've done 7 chapters consecutively. The students that owned this book, that I eventually acquired it from, they didn't get 7 chapters when they went to college. I know that because this student had a habit of underlining and making little stars in the table of contents for the information that was going to be covered in the class. I've seen this time and time again in various textbooks. So we know, and I know beyond a shadow of a doubt, that when they went to the university here in Missouri, this was Missouri Southern College, they didn't cover nearly as much as we've covered already. And they were paying for a college education. What a blessing, eh? Talk radio. Continuing here. A few other ancient cultures of the Near Orient require more than passing attention. Chief among them are the Hittite, the Aegean, the Phoenicians, and the Lydian cultures. The Hittites are important primarily as intermediaries between East and West. And as we've studied Darius, we remember the creation of the King's Highway and the Hittite kingdom, if you will, which we'll discover in a moment, was virtually bisected by this highway. They occupied a very important place. The Phoenicians, similarly, very important. They were basically the master blasters of Mediterranean seafaring for quite some time. The Phoenicians had much to do with the creation of language symbolically, the alphabets. And we'll find out a little bit more about the Phoenicians. And then there are the Lydian cultures, and we'll find out more about them. So let's go on. The Aegean civilization, whoops, they were one of the main connecting links between the civilizations of Egypt, the Tigris, the Euphrates Valley, and the region of the Aegean Sea. Again, these are the Hittites. It appears certain also that they were the original discoverers of iron, the Iron Age. The Iron Age. They introduced that metal to the surrounding people, who rapidly adopted it in place of bronze, from the Bronze Age into the Iron Age, and the Hittites are the intermediary there. The Aegean civilization is significant for its remarkable achievements in the arts and for its qualities of freedom and courage for experimentation. Though many of its achievements perished, there is evidence that the Greeks owed to the Aegean people a considerable debt. The Greek religion, for example, contained numerous Aegean elements. Likewise, of Aegean origin were probably such things as the devotion of the Greeks to athletics, their system of weights and measures, their knowledge of navigation, and perhaps also a great many of their artistic traditions. Interesting, huh? The plot thickens. We'll be back on the other side. Stay with us.
Oh,
How would you like to finally be debt-free without paying another cent to creditors and not have to file bankruptcy? DebtCrisisSolutions.com can help free you from the debt trap. This is not a debt settlement program which has tax consequences or debt consolidation. With our program, there are no more payments to creditors or collectors. We will help restore your credit history, protect your property, prevent paycheck garnishments, and preserve your bank account. We also provide mortgage modification services which can lower your mortgage payments without refinancing. If you're facing foreclosure or are in the foreclosure process, we can help. Finally, proven debt solutions that work for the people. Become debt-free in 90 days. Doing nothing doesn't make the debt go away. Call Debt Crisis Solutions today and speak to an advisor absolutely free. Call 718-615-0123. That's 718-615-0123. Or visit them online at DebtCrisisSolutions.com. That's DebtCrisisSolutions.com today.
Are you one of the people who think, I have plenty of time, nothing's ever going to happen bad to me? Do you believe that when your cupboards are bare, our corporate-controlled government will jump right in to feed you and yours? Do you have at least a year's supply of food for your family? This is Kurt, the armchair survivalist, heard on this network. Survival Enterprises sells real food, canned for long-term storage. Beef, chicken, turkey, bacon, butter, cheese, eggs, freeze-dried fruits and vegetables, Mountain House freeze-dried meals, MREs, a full nutritional line, the British Birkfeld water filter, and more. If you want to prepare now, go to beforeitstoolate.us. That's beforeitstoolate.us. Or call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. Or you can put your head in the sand and be just another sheeple in the corporate-controlled flock. But remember, those who don't learn from history are bound to repeat it.
Aerial spray, chemtrails, the modified atmosphere, heavy metals and pesticides, carcinogens and chemical fibers all falling from the sky. You have a choice to keep your body clean. Detoxify with microplant powder from hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. It's odorless and tasteless and used in any liquid or food. Protect your family now with microplant powder. Cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, and toxins. Order it now for daily intake and stock it now for long-term storage. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
Oh, yes. And so now we're back on our Wednesday, May the 13th, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local into the second hour, walking into the second hour, bringing with us the Hittites, the Aegeans, and lesser cultures, continuing our study on world civilizations, trying to come to some better and higher understandings of what anarchy is all about and generally a good foundation for understanding the mysteries and other things. Ubi materia, ibi geometria, ibi mysteria. Wherever there is matter, there is geometry, and where there is geometry, there is mystery. And so much of the mysteries come out of this particular area that it has been well worth our time, in my opinion, to study it. Let's continue a little bit. The Greek religion, for example, contained numerous Aegean elements. Likewise, of Aegean origin were probably such things as the devotion of the Greeks to athletics, their system of weights and measures, their knowledge of navigation, and perhaps also a great many of their artistic traditions. As for the Phoenicians, no one could overlook the importance of their distribution of a knowledge of the alphabet to the surrounding civilized world. The Lydians have gone down in history as the originators of the first system of coinage. Very important, often overlooked group of peoples. The Hittites and the Phrygians. Until about 80 years ago, again this was written in 1940s, Little was known of the Hittites except their name. They were commonly assumed to have played no role of any significance in the drama of history. The slighting references to them in the Bible give the impression that they were little more than a half-barbarian tribe. But in 1870, some curiously inscribed stones were found at the Hamath in Syria. This was the beginning of an extensive inquiry which has continued with few interruptions to the present day. Again, this was 1940s. It was not long until scores of other monuments and clay tablets were discovered over most of Asia Minor and throughout the Near East as far as the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. You can understand why Jorge Bush and company and the little sandbox on the Mediterranean are gleeful about spreading depleted uranium over some of the most precious archaeological inquiry that we may have on the planet Earth. Always the gatekeepers want to shut down the minds of the masses so that they can hang on to their priesthoods. Well, let's continue. In 1907, certain evidences of an ancient city were unearthed near the village of Bogaz Q in the province of Anatolia. Further excavation eventually revealed the ruins of a great fortified capital which was known as Hattusas, or the Hittite city. Within its walls were discovered more than 20,000 documents and fragments, most of them laws and decrees, of which a good number have since been deciphered. On the basis of these finds and other evidences gradually accumulated, it was soon made clear that the Hittites were once the rulers of a mighty empire covering most of Asia Minor and extending to the upper reaches of the Euphrates. Part of the time it included Syria, as well as even portions of Phoenicia and Palestine. The Hittites reached their zenith of the power during the years from 2000 to 1200 BC. In the last century of this period, they waged a long and exhausting war with Egypt, which had much to do with the downfall of both empires. Neither was able to regain its strength, and after 1200 BC, Carchemish on the Euphrates River became for a time the leading Hittite city, but as a commercial center rather than as the capital of a great empire. Emphasize that, commercial center. The days of imperial glory were over. Finally, after 717 BC, all the remaining Hittite territories were conquered and absorbed by the Assyrians, the Lydians, and the Phrygians, or you could say Phrygians. Where the Hittites came from and what their relationship to other peoples are problems which still defy a perfect solution. As depicted by the Egyptians, some of them appear to have been a mongoloid type. All had enormous hooked noses, receding foreheads, and slanting eyes. Most modern scholars trace their place of origin to Turkestan and consider them related to the Greeks. Their language was Indo-European. Its secret was unlocked during World War I by the Czech scholar Rosny. Since then, thousands of clay tablets making up the laws and official records of the emperors have been deciphered. They reveal a civilization resembling more closely the old Babylonian than any other. Hardly enough evidence has yet been collected to make possible an accurate appraisal of Hittite civilization. Is that a true statement, or is he having to hide something? Some modern historians refer to it as if it were on a level with the Mesopotamian or even with the Egyptian civilization. Some may have been the case from the material standpoint, for the Hittites undoubtedly had an extensive knowledge of agriculture and a highly developed economic life in general. They mined great quantities of silver, copper, and lead, which they sold to the surrounding nations. They discovered the mining and the use of iron and made that material available for the rest of the civilized world. Trade was also one of their principal economic pursuits. In fact, they seem to have depended almost as much upon commercial penetration as upon war for the expansion of their empire. See anything familiar in any of this? On the other hand, there is nothing as yet to indicate any marked superiority in intellectual attainments. although, of course, no one can tell what future research may reveal. The thousands of tablets so far recovered appear to be business, legal, and religious documents primarily. The literature of the Hittites consisted chiefly of mythology, including adaptations of the Gilgamesh epic and of the creation and the flood legends from the old Babylonians. They had nothing that they could be described as philosophy, nor is there any evidence of scientific originality outside of the metallurgical arts. They evidently possessed some talent for the perfection of writing, for in addition to a modified cuneiform adapted from Mesopotamia, they also developed a hieroglyphic system which was partly phonetic in character, and that's important. That's quite the change. It's like the game show, can I buy a vowel? Tried to read the old Hebrew, no vowels. Had to do the cantillation or put in little points and dots there so that you know how to, where the vowels are supposed to be. One of the most significant achievements of the Hittites was their system of law. Although reflecting Babylonian influence, it was in considerable measure unique. Approximately 200 separate paragraphs or decrees covering a great variety of subjects have been translated. They reflect a society comparatively urbane and sophisticated, but subject to minute governmental control. The title to all land was vested in a king or in the government of the cities. Grants were made to individuals only in return for military service. My property sits on top of a warrant. A warrant, not a grant, not a land grant, not a patent, but a warrant. A warrant from James Buchanan to a faithful and loyal servant in the Civil War. Anyway, time changes, so much remains the same. We'll be back on the other side. Stay with us.
They say that you could travel the world without leaving your home for the pages of a book. Adventures Unlimited brings you all the adventures that you could imagine when you travel through the pages of their books. Adventures Unlimited carries an eclectic diversity of subjects such as alternative health and science, free energy, ancient history, Native American studies, and much, much more. Get away from the daily grind, unwind, and feed your mind to free your mind. Explore any topic you wish at AdventuresUnlimitedPress.com. They're not only an online bookstore, but have stores located around the world and have been in business for over 2 decades. Adventures Unlimited Press, your own world of information is only a page away.
PureBulk.com has more than 120 nutritional products, super antioxidants, amino acids, and herbal extracts, including advanced life extension nutrition. Find great products like atomic iodine, oil of oregano, spirulina algae, niacin, performance amino acids, herbal extracts, skincare, and heart health nutrition. PureBulk.com products have no fillers, no additives, no hype, and no fancy retail packaging. Just the highest quality bulk nutrition at wholesale pricing. You can also save 50 to 90% off retail nutritional prices when buying bulk wholesale powders and capsules. Shop securely online at PureBulk.com or call 406-251-3270. That number again, 406-251-3270. Use the coupon code iodine and receive a 1 gram atomic iodine sample with any order. That's a 150-day RDA supply of atomic iodine absolutely free. Find out more online at purebulk.com.
And we're back. We're looking at the Hittites one time on air. And we see a lot of stuff coming down here. Let's continue along. I want to get to the bottom of this Hittite thing. One of the most significant achievements of the Hittites, again, was their system of law. And we dropped down through that. Approximately 200 separate paragraphs of decrees covering a great variety of subjects have been translated, dropped down a bit more. The title of all the land was vested in the king or in the governments of the cities. A lot to understand about the rise of cities, the metropolitans, and so on. Lots in there. Grants were made to individuals only in return for military service. We're going to find that to be a repeating theme throughout history all the way up to today. And under the strict requirements that the land be cultivated. In other words, it was not enough to have a piece of property, but then you were told what to do with your property. You had to cultivate it. If anyone failed to perform these obligations, his holdings reverted to the state. Rather communistic, eh? Prices were fixed in the laws themselves for an enormous number of commodities, not only for articles of luxury and for the products of industry, but even for food and clothing. All wages and fees for services were likewise minutely prescribed, with the pay of women fixed at less than half the rate for men. Curious. And curious. Curiouser and curiouser, the Cheshire Cat. On the whole, the Hittite law was more humane than that of the old Babylonians. Death was the punishment for only 8 offenses, such as witchcraft, sex relations with animals, and theft of property from the palace. Even premeditated murder was punishable only by a fine. Mutilation was not specified as a penalty at all, except for arson or theft when committed by a slave. The contrast with the cruelties of Assyrian law was much more striking. Not a single example is to be found in the Hittite decrees of such fiendish punishments as flaying, castration, and impalement, which the rulers at Nineveh seemed to think necessary for maintaining their authority. Unfortunately, the reasons for this more liberal spirit of the Hittite lawgivers remains enshrouded in mystery. Perhaps they had the good sense to realize that justice is more important than force in preserving an orderly society. The art of the Hittites was not of outstanding excellence. So far as we know, it included only sculpture and architecture. The former was generally crude and naive, but at the same time it revealed a freshness and a vigor all too uncommon in the work of Oriental peoples. Most of it was in the form of reliefs depicting scenes of war and mythology. Architecture was ponderous and huge. Temples and palaces were squat, unadorned structures with small two-columned porches and great stone lions guarding the entrance. Get the idea or understand a little bit about the mind of our author here. He paints a wonderful verbal picture, a word picture of all of these various civilizations. And the book is pretty well loaded with good photographs, too, and drawings. There's one here, The Art of the Hittites. And it shows very unusual things here. There's a king, if you will, seated on a chair. And then there are two, perhaps, priests. They are half man, half beast. They have the torso and the head of a man, and the lower torso, it looks like, of a bull. And they're holding, between the two of them, they're holding up this, could be a sundial with wings and tail feathers, much like, a totem pole, for instance, the way that the Thunderbird is displayed in the Alaskan totem poles. But it's also a common theme throughout all of this Oriental despotism, this kind of an idea. I'll read the caption. It says, Hittite sculpture, perhaps the most highly conventionalized sculpture of the ancient world, notice conventionalized, was that of the Hittite reliefs. Noteworthy are the animal legs and tails with human torsos and heads, the Mesopotamian treatment of the hair and the beard, the fingers of even length, and the huge noses. And huge they are, my friends. Curious also is the facing position of the king's feet. They not only had big hook noses, but they faithfully reproduced their big hook noses in their artwork. That is, it calls to our attention, you know, in Ivanhoe and a lot of the early writings and talking about the Jews as moneylenders, you know. Always they had their big hook noses. And today a lot of the artists and comedy people still focus on that hook nose. Are we talking about Hebrews? Are we talking about people of some kind of a Hebrew descent or people who follow the Judaism as a religion? Or maybe we're talking about Hittites and you're just not getting the full meal deal. Not a great deal is known about the Hittite religion except that it had an elaborate mythology, innumerable deities, and forms of worship of Mesopotamian origin. The name of the chief deity seems to have been Addu, A-D-D-U, a god of the storm who was always represented with a bolt of lightning issuing from his hand. But the chief place in the pantheon was given to a mother goddess of fertility whose name is unknown. A sun god was also worshipped and a great host of other deities, some of whom appear to have had no particular function at all. The Hittites seem to have welcomed into the divine company practically all of the gods of the peoples that they conquered and even of the nations that bought their wares. So we can see something there of the Egyptian. We can see something there of all of the other religions up to this point, and we can certainly see this in Catholicism. Nothing can be found in the records to indicate that the religion was in any sense ethical. The chief historical importance of the Hittites probably lies in the role which they played as intermediaries between the Tigris-Euphrates Valley and the westernmost portions of the Near East. Doubtless, in this way, cultural elements from Mesopotamia were transmitted to such nations as the Canaanites, the Hyksos, and perhaps even to the people of the Aegean Islands. But the Hittite culture itself appears not to have been without direct influence. It seems to have reflected in the social customs of the Phrygians, who flourished from about 900 to 300 BC. And their territory occupied the west portion of Asia Minor, extending as far east as the Halys River, H-A-L-Y-S. In language and literature, they, this would now be the Phrygians, appear to have been related to the Greeks, and they constituted an important channel for the transmission of cultural elements to the Greeks and Romans. Their most widely copied institution was the cult of Cybele. It's spelled either capital C-Y-B-E-L-E or K-Y-B-E-L-E. She was the great mother. She's pictured here in a carving on a processional cart drawn by lions. And although this statue was produced by the Romans in the 2nd century, the goddess herself was of Phrygian origin, and she became one of the most popular deities of the ancient world. Always this fertility goddess someplace in the woods, if you look. Continuing, the Great Mother, which spread rapidly and influenced the mystery religions of both Greece and Italy. The chief deities of the cult were Cybele, the Earth Mother, and Sabesius, the Sun, who died and rose from the dead each year with the death and the rebirth of vegetation. Always the rising sun. Always resurrection. Its ceremonies were characterized by ecstatic frenzy, bloody sacrifices, and wild orgiastic dances. The Phrygians were conquered by the Lydians about 610 BC, but recovered their power and enjoyed a semi-independent and relatively prosperous status for another two centuries. Their early kings were all named either Gordius or Midas, the Midas touch. The tomb of one of them was discovered in 1957 by a University of Pennsylvania archaeological expedition near Ankara, the capital of modern Turkey. Some authorities maintain that the Trojans, who were attacked by the Greek in the 12th century, were allies of the Hittites. If this is true, it would almost certainly follow that Trojan culture would bear the stamp of Hittite influence. We'll continue.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, "Information is the currency of democracy." Trine Day brings to you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monk is a book of profound importance. It helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book, Exposing the Secret Plans of the World's Elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At hempusa.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At hempusa.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to LibertyStickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
So we'll close this little segment out here on the Hittites and the Phrygians and the Lydians with this. It says, inasmuch as the Trojans maintained close relation with the Cretans, if they were not indeed of the same race, it would be reasonable to assume that some cultural interchange between the Hittites and the principal centers of the Aegean civilization existed. You know, when we look at all of these various and sundry civilizations and think about the thousands of years that we've been discussing here the past few days, and we're on part number 14, I think, of this little study so far. Not quite 14 hours worth, but certainly 14 times back to this topic. But if we can wrap our minds around 2,500, 3,500, 4,500 years, look at it on a map. Get out your atlas, your world atlas, and look at this Near East and the Middle East areas that we're talking about. You know, Texas, the neighboring states, a little bit of Mexico. You know, just drop your point of your compass right down on Dealey Plaza and spin a circle. We're not talking about a huge area, but we're talking about lots of people for a lot of time. And, of course, you know, we get into this ignorant arrogance, you know, of our knowledge, but there's so much that has come before us that we know so, and we know so little of it. But with every passing decade, we find out a little bit more and a little bit more, and now with the blessing of the Internet, supposedly, we have the opportunity to spread this to the four winds. Everybody can have access to this information if they'll but try. Let's go into the Aegean civilization a little bit and understand them. This is a very interesting bunch here. By a strange coincidence, our author writes, again, we're referring to world civilizations by Edward McNall Burns, Western Civilizations. The Aegean civilization, by a strange coincidence, the discovery of the existence of the Hittite in the Aegean civilizations was made at just about the same time. Before 1870, scarcely anyone dreamed that a great civilization had flourished on the Aegean islands and on the shores of Asia Minor for hundreds of years prior to the Greeks. Students of the Iliad knew, of course, of the references to a strange people who were supposed to have dwelt in Troy, to have kidnapped the fair Helen, and to have been punished by the Greeks for this act by the siege and destruction of their city. But it was commonly supposed that these accounts were mere figments of a poetical imagination. The first discovery of an Aegean cultural center was made not by a professional archaeologist, but by a retired German businessman, Heinrich Schliemann. Heinrich here. Fascinated from early youth by the stories of the Homeric epics, he determined to dedicate his life to archaeological research as soon as he had sufficient income to enable him to do so. Luckily for him and for the world, he accumulated a fortune in Russian petroleum and then retired from business to spend both time and money in the pursuit of his boyhood dreams. In 1870, he began excavating at Troy. Within a few years, he had uncovered portions of nine cities, each built upon the ruins of its predecessor. The second of these cities he identified as the Troy of the Iliad. Although it has been proved since that Troy was the sixth, after fulfilling his first great ambition, he started excavations on the mainland of Greece and eventually discovered two other Aegean cities, Mycenae and Tyrenes, maybe. The work of Schliemann, was soon followed by that of other investigators, notably the Englishman Sir Arthur Evans, who discovered Knossos, the resplendent capital of the kings of Crete. And that's K-N-O-S-S-O-S. Up to the present time, more than half of the ancient Aegean sites have been carefully searched, and a wealth of knowledge has been accumulated about various aspects of their culture. The Aegean civilization appears to have originated on the island of Crete, the settlements on the mainland of Greece and in Asia Minor being evidently due to expansion. In a few other cases, history does the geographic interpretation of culture origins fits so neatly. Crete has a benign and equable climate, neither so hot as to make men lazy, nor so cold as to require a life of unceasing struggle. That's important. It lends itself to that leisure of philosophical thinking. While the soil is fertile, it is not of unlimited area. Consequently, as the population increased, men were impelled to sharpen their wits and to contrive new means of earning a living. Also important. Some emigrated, others took to the sea, but a larger number remained at home and developed articles for export. The latter included especially wine and olive oil, pottery, gems and seals, knives and daggers, and objects of skilled craftsmanship. The chief imports were foodstuffs and metals. As a result of such trade, the country became an industrial and commercial nation with prosperous cities and extensive contacts with the surrounding civilized world. Added to these factors of a favorable environment were the beauties of nature, which abounded almost everywhere, stimulating the development of a marvelous art. The Aegean civilization was one of the earliest in history of the world, and as far back as 3000 BC, the natives of Crete had made the transition from the Neolithic stage to the age of metals and probably to the age of writing. The first peak of attainment was attained under the leadership of the cities of Knossos and Phaistos about 1800 BC. About 100 years later, a frightful calamity occurred. The great palace at Knossos was demolished and the chief buildings in several other cities as well. Exactly what happened has not been determined, but there is evidence that an earthquake followed by a revolution accounted for the disaster. At any rate, a new dynasty came to the throne, a new system of writing was adopted, and other elements in the life of the past were changed. After about 50 years of uncertainty, the Aegean civilization rose to new heights of brilliance and strength. Troy and the cities of Crete were rebuilt, and other great centers were established at Mycenae and Tarsus. Soon afterwards, Cretan hegemony was extended over the remaining portions of the Aegean world, but the new age of power and splendor was not destined for long duration. In the 16th century BC, a group of barbarian Greeks known as the Achaeans expanded from their original home, Achaea, in the northern Peloponnesus, and eventually conquered Mycenae. I'm probably blowing all of these words. I'm not Greek. Even a Greek cab driver does better with this stuff than I do. Gradually absorbing the material culture of the vanquished, they became rich and powerful sea lords. About 1400 BC, they overwhelmed the city of Knossos, and soon the whole island of Crete passed under their sway. Although they were no longer a primitive people, they seemed never to have appreciated the finer aspects of Aegean culture. As a result of this period of Mycenaean supremacy was marked by a decline in Aegean art and probably in intellect as well. In the 12th century, the Achaeans waged their successful war with the Trojans, but less than 200 years later, they fell themselves the victims of barbarian invasion. The new hordes that came in were also Greeks, but they belonged to the group known as the Dorians. You know, as we go through all this, the Phrygians, the Dorians, the Lydians, and all that, there are many music scales that have these names as well, and additionally, there's architectural design that follows these names. But these Dorians, and then they were from Doris in central Greece, their culture was relatively primitive except for the fact that they had iron weapons. For centuries, they'd lived on the mainland of Greece, gradually penetrating farther southward about 1200 BC. They began their conquest of the Mycenaean cities. 200 years later, the Aegean civilization had passed into the limbo of history. Friends, we're only a couple hundred years old ourselves. Is the United States of America and all of the things that we've done and achieved, all the several states, all the cities, all the things that we've done, just going to pass into the limbo of history? The racial character of the Aegean people has been determined with substantial accuracy. Archaeological data from Crete, at least, have been found in sufficient profusion to leave little doubt that its ancient inhabitants were a composite nation. Their ancestors appear to have come from Syria and Anatolia and were closely related to the Hittites and to the earliest invaders of India. At the same time, there is evidence from the fact that their artists depicted them with long beards, short, slender bodies, and dark, wavy hair, that they bore a relationship to the Egyptians. Although they occupied Greek territory, they were not Greeks at all, in the historic meaning of that name. The true Greeks, as we shall presently see, were of altogether different ethnic origin. The Aegean civilization was probably one of the freest and most progressive in all of the Near Orient. We'll find out about that on the other side of this break. Stay with us.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail. It is a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products, including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic foods,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home
and garden, and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website again is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
How would you like to finally be debt-free without paying another cent to creditors and not have to file bankruptcy? DebtCrisisSolutions.com can help free you from the debt trap. This is not a debt settlement program which has tax consequences or debt consolidation. With our program, there are no more payments to creditors or collectors. We will help restore your credit history, protect your property, prevent paycheck garnishments, and preserve your bank account. We also provide mortgage modification services which can lower your mortgage payments without refinancing. If you're facing foreclosure or are in the foreclosure process, we can help. Finally, proven debt solutions that work for the people. Become debt-free in 90 days. Doing nothing doesn't make the debt go away. Call Debt Crisis Solutions today and speak to an advisor absolutely free. Call 718-615-0123. That's 718-615-0123. Or visit them online at DebtCrisisSolutions.com. That's DebtCrisisSolutions.com today.
Are you one of the people who think, I have plenty of time, nothing's ever going to happen bad to me? Do you believe that when your cupboards are bare, our corporate-controlled government will jump right in to feed you and yours? Do you have at least a year's supply of food for your family? This is Kurt, the armchair survivalist, heard on this network. Survival Enterprises sells real food, canned for long-term storage. Beef, chicken, turkey, bacon, butter, cheese, eggs, freeze-dried fruits and vegetables, Mountain House freeze-dried meals, MREs, a full nutritional line, the British Birkfeld water filter, and more. If you want to prepare now, go to beforeitstoolate.us. That's beforeitstoolate.us. Or call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. Or you can put your head in the sand and be just another sheeple in the corporate-controlled flock. But remember, those who don't learn from history are bound to repeat it.
And we returned once again, so let's close this out. I'm trying to go as quickly as I can. I want to really get down with this. Let's see if I can do something different here. I don't think we need to go through all of the things, the industries and whatnot. They did a lot. They did a lot. These Aegean people, literacy was nearly well-nigh universal. Women enjoyed complete equality with men. They had olive oil refineries, potteries. They did smithing, smith work, bronze work, all kinds of stuff in here. The king was the capitalist, the chief capitalist and the entrepreneur in the country. They did much. Again, I'll just say it this way. The Aegean civilization was probably one of the freest and the most progressive in all of the Near Orient. The ruler was known by the title of Minos, which was roughly the equivalent of Pharaoh, hence the name Minoan, which is sometimes applied to this civilization. That it was the title of divinity is shown by the fact that it was occasionally used as if it referred to a god. And yet he did not overawe his citizens at home. And then drops down here through some other things. The Cretans were the first to build stone theaters. We see that. The religion of the subjects of Minos was a medley of strange characteristics. First of all, it was matriarchal. The chief deity was not a god but a goddess who was the ruler of the entire universe, the sea and the sky as well as the earth. All existing things were emanations from her, but it was especially as the embodiment of fecundity and therefore as the source of all life that she achieved her significance. In this capacity, she was often represented as a Madonna with bared breasts carrying the holy child, or tenderly watching over him. The serpent and the dove were the constant companions, possibly as active symbols of regenerative powers or qualities of wisdom and mercy. Originally, no male deity appears to have been worshipped, but later a god was associated with the goddess as her son and lover. Also, like the divine sons in several other religions, he died and rose from the dead. He was never regarded by the Cretans as of particular importance. In the second place, the Aegean religion was thoroughly monistic. The mother goddess was the source of evil as well as the good, but not in any morbid or terrifying sense. Though she brought the storm and spread destruction in her path, these served for the replenishing of nature. Death itself was interpreted as the condition prerequisite for life. Whether the religion had any ethical purposes is unknown. Its followers undoubtedly looked forward to a happy survival in another world, although not necessarily as a reward for good deeds on earth. The dead were buried with solicitous care and provided with nearly every accessory that would enhance their comfort. This is much like the Egyptians. Food and drink, toilet articles, lamps, razors, mirrors, and games were the principal articles furnished for the deceased of all classes and ages. And remember, we know of this because of the archaeological exhumation of these places. No signs of any belief in a place of future punishment have ever been found. In other words, there was no hell in their mind. Other rather curious features included the worship of animals, the bull, the stag, the minotaur, which was half bull and half man, the worship of sacred trees, the veneration of sacred objects, which were probably reproductive symbols, the double-headed axe, the pillar, and the cross, and the employment of priestesses instead of priests to administer the rites of the cult. By far the most important act of worship was sacrifice. At the great religious festivals, hundreds of animals and large quantities of grain and fruit were brought as grateful offerings to the goddess and her son. You see the same in the Bible in regards to the temple in Jerusalem. It is doubtful, however, that these sacrifices represented in any sense an atonement for sin. They were intended rather to provide sustenance for the deities and to bring man into a sacramental fellowship with them. Even their god was always broke, huh? And hungry too. The common Oriental idea of the scapegoat sacrifice, or the shedding of blood for the remission of sins, would appear to have been foreign to the Aegean temperament. For nearly 80 years after the discovery of the Aegean civilizations, its system of writing remained one of the enigmas of history. About 1950, however, the Czech scholar Bodrik Hrosny, who had already deciphered Hittite writing, succeeded in unlocking the mystery of Cretan inscriptions. He showed that this dominant Aegean people produced not only one system of writing, but three, a hieroglyphic script and two linear scripts, which were used in successive periods. In 1953, an English scholar, Michael Ventry, announced that he had discovered a method which would enable him to decipher the second of these scripts, linear script B, and in 1962, Dr. Cyrus Gordon of Brandeis University concluded that linear script A was Phoenician, written with a Cretan variation. But all of the inscriptions found thus far are records of business transactions, inventories, and the like. No literary texts have been unearthed. It is impossible, therefore, to tell whether any literature or philosophy had been written. The problem of scientific achievements is easier for solution since we have material remains for our guidance. Archaeological discoveries on the island of Crete indicate that the ancient inhabitants were gifted inventors and engineers. They built excellent roads of concrete about 11 feet wide. Nearly all the basic principles of modern sanitary engineering were known to the designers of the Palace of Knossos, with the result that the royal family of Crete in the 17th century BC enjoyed comforts and conveniences which were not available for the wealthiest rulers of Western countries until the 17th century AD. Amazing, isn't it? How we just close doors on vast amounts of knowledge and move forward blindly. If there was any one achievement of the Aegean people which appears more than others to emphasize the vitality and the freedom in their culture, it was their art. With the exception of the Greek, no other art of the ancient world was quite its equal. Its distinguishing features were delicacy, spontaneity, and naturalism. It served not to glorify the ambitions of an arrogant ruling class or to inculcate the doctrines of a religion, but to express the delight of the ordinary man in the world of beauty around him. As a result, it was remarkably free from the retarding influence of ancient traditions. It was unique, moreover, in the universality of its application, for it tended not merely to paintings and statues, but even to the humblest objects of ordinary use. While it continues, and there's much there, very interesting stuff to know about these Aegeans. Here's a little bit in closing on them. Despite its limited influence, the Aegean civilization is not without importance for the student of history, for it was one of the few in ancient times which assured even to its humblest citizens a reasonable share of happiness and prosperity, free from the tyranny of a despotic state and a crafty priesthood. If you can't remember the last time you experienced the pursuit of happiness, my friends, then you're definitely in the right place at the right time for us to become vocal local. We needn't live in this continuous mental mind-forged manacle state of these crafty priesthoods and despotic states, this tyranny. These are all things we can do without. We can leave them behind. But we're not going to be able to do that unless, I'm afraid, we energize within this particular system for a period of time and alter the system of control that has been established that keeps us constantly and perpetually in bondage, made slaves of the world, pillaged at every opportunity for what little prosperity we may have left on this continent. There are things that we can do if we will but try. And I think if we understand the established two-party political system, and I know it's like a drone with me, but they seem to be the intermediaries, they seem to be the ones, the gatekeepers that stand between we the people and our government, and they allow, they let, they are complicit with the commission of all of these great crimes and treasons against we the people. It's these parties that operate as the filter and the conveyance for these various tyrannies. They have the power, according to our Constitution. They could revise all of this and bring it to a rapid end tomorrow if there was but the political will in Congress to do it. There's absolutely no reason for visiting tyranny on the local people if we the people actually ran the government locally. But we don't. We do nothing. We allow our malaise and apathy to root us to the lazy boy, and as a result, we're losing our birthright. Folks, we'll be back again tomorrow with our special guest, Jim. We'll talk about micro AM. Until then, have a great day.
Taking it back, one precinct, one county, one state at a time. You've been listening to Become Vocal Local.
Aerial spray, chemtrails, the modified atmosphere, heavy metals and pesticides, carcinogens and chemical fibers all falling from the sky. You have a choice to keep your body clean. Detoxify with microplant powder from hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. It's odorless and tasteless and used in any liquid or food. Protect your family now with microplant powder. Cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, and toxins. Order it now for daily intake and stock it now for long-term storage. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
They say that you could travel the world without leaving your home through the pages of a book. Adventures Unlimited brings you all the adventures that you could imagine when you travel through the pages of their books. Adventures Unlimited carries an eclectic diversity of subjects such as alternative health and science, free energy, ancient history, Native American studies, and much, much more. Get away from the daily grind, unwind, and feed your mind to free your mind. Explore any topic you wish at AdventuresUnlimitedPress.com. They're not only an online bookstore, but have stores located around the world and have been in business for over 2 decades. Adventures Unlimited Press, your own world of information is only a page away.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.